When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host Beth Lindop, and today I'm joined by Paul Gorst and Theo Squires. How are we both? Still basking in the warm glow of Wednesday's win?
I don't know about that. I think I'm still coming to terms with Jürgen's announcements. I mean, it was only a week ago, but it feels like it was weeks and weeks ago when we've dissected it to the nth degree, but still waiting to get some people's views on it and whatever else. So yeah, it was a busy day, busy week, and a bit of football amongst it all. So yeah, it's been a transfer deadline day as well.
That doesn't really count. Nothing.
Yeah,
happened.
Just another busy week covering the Reds, I guess.
I'm just glad we're recording on Friday, because I looked dead yesterday. I don't know about you, Gorsty, but when we logged on for that morning meeting, I had massive bags under my eyes.
Yeah.
8:15 kickoffs. They shouldn't catch on. Let's get rid of them.
I mean, you're looking $1 million now, Theo. Oh, so all good and plenty to dissect, as Gorsty said there. We are live, so if you've got any questions, pop them in the chat, and our lovely producer Ian will notify us, and we can do our best to answer them. But best place to start, I suppose, is Wednesday night at Anfield, probably one of, if not the performance of the season. I think prior to that, people may be questioning, have this Liverpool side got what it takes against sort of the big sides? They hadn't won against the top six. And, you know, you can say what you like about Chelsea in terms of the form this season. Unlikely they'll probably finish in the top six, but they are, you know, still a threat. And Liverpool, it was a performance of champions, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the best performance of the season, no doubt. Yeah, there were some question marks, weren't there, over how Liverpool were going to handle it. I mean, Chelsea, for me, have been really poor for best part of 2 years now. So, I mean, you're reluctant to say that they're not a top six side, not a top six side, but a top six club, if that sort of makes sense. Mm-hmm. And given that Liverpool were unable to break down Man United and then that draw with Arsenal, you're kind of thinking, well, how's this one going to shake out? Have Liverpool got enough in them to do the business? But after about 10-15 minutes, I don't think you had any concerns, did you? I remember saying to, I think it was to you, Theo, or Doyle, kind of turned and just said, this is coming, you know, Liverpool are battering the door down, and so it proved. Yeah, Klopp said today that it was an outstanding performance. He absolutely loved it. And just sort of coming into form at the right time, you'd suggest. You know, certainly since Christmas, you know, Liverpool have been flying. But this calendar year now, they've had three Premier League games. They've scored 12 goals, won all three. And they're absolutely flying. And looking at the kind of the makeup of the team, the mental strength of the team, the quality of the squad, the fact that they're getting so many players back from injuries at key times, they've only lost one game now in 10 Premier League months. Okay, of course, there were a few months there when it was the off-season or whatever, but it takes a lot now to beat this team. They're not going to crumble. They're not just going to capitulate. And it's going to set up another titanic tussle with Arsenal, won't it? With Manchester City, and Arsenal might still have something to say about it all. So it's going to be fascinating now for the next 3 months. But I thought Wednesday was an excellent way of putting to bed any concerns that Liverpool might stumble in the wake of Jürgen Klopp's news last week. The players, you know, responded perfectly, and that's what you want to see going forward.
Yeah, it has been a massive month. Liverpool still fighting on four fronts, and historically under Jürgen Klopp, January hasn't always been the easiest month. We saw that last year, back-to-back 3-0 defeats in the January, wasn't there? So for them to have come through a really tough run of fixtures with a lot of injuries as well, Theo, it is really impressive.
Yeah, it is. It's a very strong squad, and as Klopp said himself, when players have got injured, other ones have grabbed the opportunity, the kids have grabbed the opportunity, and then when someone else goes away on international duty, it's always timely with someone coming back. It makes you appreciate just how good this squad is, how strong it is. In the past, we've had sides that have gone for all the trophies, and you know what the best 11 is going to be. It's pretty untouchable apart from one or two players at centre-back or in midfield. Whereas now, there's only three or four players that you'll say, yep, that's who I want starting in the biggest games, and the rest you can chop and change at will. Like, we'll get to the teams we're going to pick at the weekend at the end of this podcast. but I'm already fretting over Connor Bradley or Trent Alexander-Arnold, who goes into that midfield. Like, it might not be a big dilemma in attack at the moment, but the rest of the team, they're just all stepping up at big moments, and you just got to hope they've got the energy to do it for 4 or 5 months. But you've got the faith that they have, because they've been there before, they've done it before. The younger ones, while they haven't got necessarily the medals themselves, they've still been in the club that's got that winning mentality, and they've signed the right players. And Klopp said himself, oh, we were lucky, weren't we? And I know that was a bit tongue-in-cheek about what happened with Chelsea and everything, but it's more, he's just delighted that he's got the players that he did get in, and they have made such an impact. Like, we can sit and talk about Szoboszlai, McAllister, Endo all day. They've been superb signings. So long may it continue with them to come, Endo to come back from international duty, Thiago to come back from injury, and all the others. It's just going to get better in the weeks ahead.
Mo Salah.
Oh, you forget about him, doesn't he?
Fantastic team performance on Wednesday, but some really impressive individual performances as well. Connor Bradley probably chief among those. I think it's 6 goal involvements now in 4 games, which for a 20-year-old player who, you know, even
the new trend.
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
What were you doing at 20 years old?
Oh, I wasn't scoring the Premier League against Chelsea anyway.
A few weeks ago, you probably didn't really factor into to many Liverpool fans' plans for the rest of the season, and now he's almost bordering on undroppable.
Yeah. I mean, 5 successive starts. I mean, a lot of that was obviously down to Trent being injured. Didn't expect Trent, even though he's fit again, to play against Norwich, but I wondered whether Alexander-Arnold might come back in for that Chelsea game, and when I saw it was Bradley, I thought, well, you can't really argue, you know, he's playing really well, he's been in good form, and if you drop players when they're playing well, then what's the incentive to play well? But it was more than that, wasn't it? Klopp's obviously not dropped them or not rested them or rotated them because he knows that he can be a really effective player. Just a sensational performance, and not one of those that you're bigging up because it was a young player and you're kind of giving them a little bit more praise than you might if it was a senior first team player. It was a genuinely sensational performance, and I think I tweeted it about 20 minutes ago, struggling to remember the last time a young player with such limited experience has played this well. Because even when Trent came into the team, he wasn't doing that after 5 appearances, was he? That was sort of when he was becoming a little bit of a kind of senior member of the team after sort of, you know, 100 appearances or so. It was brilliant, but I was having a chat with Doyle on the way back from the game, and he mentioned it, and I did a little bit of research into it. It was actually Bradley's 80th senior professional appearance.
Wow.
Obviously only 15 or so for Liverpool, if that, but he's not a total rookie.
Does that include the internationals?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah. And he's played 10, 11 times for Northern Ireland, so he's not a total rookie, but I think Liverpool fans are starting to wake up to what he's able to do. Made his debut well over 2 years ago now against Norwich in the League Cup. I think a lot of fans might have forgotten about that game just because it was a bit of a ordinary sort of early Carabao Cup game fixture, won the early rounds. But on this form, you're struggling to take him out of the team because he was just unbelievable on Wednesday.
Yeah, I suppose it shows as well, doesn't it, the benefits of loaning out young players to the EFL. I mean, we've seen it with Jarrell Kwanzaa coming through this season, Connor Bradley now as well. And like Gorsi said there, he's maybe not played that many games for Liverpool, but having that ground in, you know, further down the leagues and that real sort of education that I guess playing senior football brings you is really beneficial, isn't it?
Yeah, Liverpool have got this complex relationship with loans, or Jurgen Klopp does anyway. Like, we know when he first came in, he didn't like it. He didn't understand the loan market, and they basically recalled everyone, didn't they, in his first few weeks at the club. But as he's got used to English football, he's realised it has its benefits. Like, while you can stay with the 21s, play a few games there and train with the first team, sometimes you do need to go out in a men's environment. And there is a mixture of success stories and plays where it hasn't happened. Like, for all the success, we have seen a number come back halfway through a season having not played a lot of football, but then they're training with the first team again. It's about what suits the players. Sometimes they need those games. They need to bulk up physically. They need to see what it would be like if they didn't make it at Liverpool to be like a waking up call for them. Other times it's just train with Salah, train with Van Dijk and all this. You get that nice blend here. Like, Trent didn't need a loan spell. He was ready for the first team. Curtis Jones, the same. Maybe Bobby Clark, like, there was talk that he could go out on loan, but they seem to have been quite pleased with how he's been for the last couple of months. So he's now part of that first team squad. But like you mentioned there, Kwanzaa, Connor Bradley, this isn't players that have gone on loan and then taken their time to get up to the levels. They've gone and done it for a year, 6 months in League One, and then straight away they can step up to the Premier League. And this is credit to Klopp and the academy staff, that everyone at Liverpool is trained to play the same way, the same style, Like when they signed Bradley at Bolton, they knew they were getting those Liverpool attributes in a player of pressing, getting forward, what you want to see in a fullback. And they'll like to think they'll get the same from Ramsey now, but we're now seeing it back in the Premier League. And you'd like to think this is just the start for Bradley rather than adrenaline. From what we've seen so far, I'd go along with it. It probably is. He's just going to get better and better and better. Just wish he hadn't been injured in pre-season.
Yeah. Go on, Gosty.
No, that's a good point. You know, he's missed 3 months of football, hasn't he, where he would have played probably every Europa League round, you know, six fixtures there in Europe. And did he miss he missed the Carabao Cup game at Leicester? Didn't he? Curtis Jones play the right back? Mm-hmm. So he's probably missed out on, you know, certainly maybe 8 to 10 Liverpool appearances.
Just played, like, just short of 20. Mm-hmm. So you'd imagine Bradley would be close to that if he hadn't had the injury.
Yeah. So, and to kind of come back from that injury at this level so quick, you know, is testament to his ability and his mental strength, I guess. So, yeah, it's a real dilemma now for Klopp, that, but one that you'd rather have than, you know, having no one there, really, which has been the case for quite a few weeks now with the number of injuries across all throughout the squad, really.
Yeah, I mean, another player who was absolutely fantastic, I thought, on Wednesday night was Alexis McAllister. Mm. I mean, I really like this morning the quote from Jurgen Klopp in his press conference that he's a football doctor, which, very high praise indeed from the manager there. I mean, probably one of his best performances, wasn't it, in a Liverpool shirt?
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant against Bournemouth. And then he's just carried that on, hasn't he, against Chelsea. And I must admit, I've said a few times on this pod, I was a bit worried about whether he was a natural number six and, you know, kind of associate that role with tough tackling and strong physicality and mobility and getting across the pitch and then kind of doing a dirty work and leaving the creativity to other areas of the pitch. But McAllister is kind of changing my view on that. He's been superb for a few months now, but certainly the last couple of games, he's really shown that he can match the kind of technical surety that he's got in possession with his passing and, you know, his ability to find space with the kind of traditional things you'd associate with a tough tackling number six. So, yeah, I was thinking before Endo left, Endo was one of the first names on the team sheet. Now was that number six. But now I'm thinking, well, he's not going to get back in the team now because McAllister's shown what he can do. And that, again, is testament to the recruitment and the kind of rhythm and momentum that Liverpool have got at the moment. I thought he was excellent and set the tone. And Klopp was interesting today, wasn't he, when he was talking about his, you know, his family and, you know, his dad was a footballer and his brother plays for USG in Belgium and, you know, his cousins and his uncles and all that. And he said he owes his dad, you know, can't thank him enough for what he did for him at an early age and kind of making him the player that he is. So, when you look at it on Wednesday when, you know, Enzo Fernandez is his Argentina teammate and Moises Caicedo was his former Brighton teammate and they've cost Chelsea about $220 million and Liverpool got McAllister for 35. I know we got the best deal out of those three.
Yeah, definitely. I think he outclassed everyone, didn't he, in that midfield. And it'll be interesting now, I think, to see what Liverpool do in the summer, perhaps, because I think last summer we much thought that they would be in the market for a number six. Now, the form of Vitor Arendu and Alexis McAllister, both of them, it leaves Liverpool with some big questions.
Yeah, we're with Pochettis to come back at some point as well. I think he was kind of earmarked as maybe the long-term heir in that position. He's had a difficult sort of 11 months now, hasn't he, because of injury and whatever else. But still young enough that McAllister can carry on in that position then, though, for backup as well and give Pochettis that time and space to develop into the player that Liverpool think he can be. And Liverpool have got plenty of options there for the long term.
It was quite telling, isn't it? Like, start of December, looking ahead to the January transfer window, if you're saying what Liverpool needed, we'd have all been going, probably need a number six, not quite satisfied with what they got there, maybe another centre-back or a right-back so you could put Trent into midfield. Look at it now, none of that. That's just been eradicated completely. Like, Gomez was superb, so you can just play him anywhere along the back four. So that quietens the need for a centre-back, as does Quantz's emergence. Bradley, you've got your right-back there. And as we've just been saying, Endo has been superb. McAllister stepped up again, been superb. You've got Trent in there as well. It's like, where does the new manager strengthen when the time comes? Obviously, they'll always find a way, and you'd like to think owners will back him sufficiently in the summer and getting a few new faces. But it's a great starting point for whoever it is who does replace Klopp.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, and it's not only in sort of midfield and defence where Liverpool have a lot of talent. We've seen, you know, going forward, they have probably one of the most formidable attacking units in the league, don't they? And among that crop is Darwin Núñez, obviously.
I'd say you asked me about Darwin.
Yeah, he's always in the headlines, but for good reasons, for bad reasons. I think we are all sometimes a little bit guilty of being a bit reactionary whenever he's had a good game, whenever he's had a bad game. I think that performance on Wednesday probably encapsulates his Liverpool career so far. You know, a couple of big misses, but overall, just a phenomenal contribution to the team. I mean, what did you make of him on Wednesday? And obviously now there's question marks over whether he'll even feature on Sunday.
Yeah.
Jürgen Klopp said he left the stadium in a boot, not a football boot, a protective boot. So it's a question of whether he can even get his foot back in his football boots on Sunday. But yeah, he'll be a big loss, won't he, Theo, if he can't play against Arsenal.
I wouldn't write him off from playing just yet. Like, we've seen him kind of appear for training today in his training wear, no protective boot, doesn't seem to have any bandaging on.
You think he had a sliders on there, though, didn't he? He certainly didn't have his size 10s on.
True. So, but you'd like to think he can be at least fit for the bench. And I imagine we'll get some training pictures at some point in the next couple of hours. So by the time people listen to this or watch this, he probably has already trained and we'll be out. Oh, Darwin Núñez is fine. But he seems the sort of 15 minutes from just
something like
outside
that,
the box. And I think he had 11 shots in total. How many more would he have had if he hadn't got injured his foot in like the 20th? He was a nuisance from start to finish.
He got repetitive strain from shooting.
Maybe. But like, we all knew he was probably going to miss the penalty because it just felt a very Darwin Núñez thing to do. But as long as he's creating mischief and he's being this agent of chaos, he's creating chances for his teammates, he's keeping the centre-backs busy, creating spaces, having shots on goal, making that himself a nuisance. You know what you're getting, you know what you want from him, and he's doing exactly that. It's when he has games like Crystal Palace or I think United where he's not really doing much, you get on his back a bit and go, what are you doing here? We need more from you. But he's doing exactly what Jürgen Klopp wants from him at the moment, and you've got no doubts that the goals will come. He might have hit the woodwork three times more than anyone else in the Premier League this season. He's got the most missed big chances, but he's still got 22 goal contributions. 11 goals, 11 assists. That's really impressive for a striker just after the halfway point of the season. When he isn't your leading goal scorer, he's not your go-to. That is still Mo Salah, and Jota's a better finisher anyway. But he's a very interesting package, as Klopp keeps saying.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way to describe him, isn't it? Quite a diplomatic way to describe him, but he is. And I think the thing is, you hear from the way that the fan base just absolutely adore him, don't they?
Yeah, for good reason as well. He's not some sort of, you know, cult hero figure of comedy who the fans just kind of rally behind because they like him. He's a really effective footballer, and there was a period in the first half where he goes back to goal and he kind of drops off 10 yards and gets ahead of Thiago Silva with a little nudge out wide to Diaz, and it was just a real powerful show of centre-forward play, and the crowd really reacted to that type of stuff. And from minute one, like Theo says, he had the bit between his teeth. He was firing in shots left and right at Petrovic's goal. On another day, that left-footed one maybe creeps in the far corner, the one that he tipped onto the bar, maybe that swerves and goes into the net. He should have scored the header. He should definitely have scored the penalty, but
he probably does score the header if he scored the penalty.
Yeah. But the assist for Diaz was right on the money, wasn't it? Right in that six-yard area, and Chelsea just couldn't defend that. I thought he was excellent. You know, it's funny when he puts in a performance that good, that powerful and sort of imposing, that we're still talking about the chances missed and whatever. Sometimes you feel for him, but like I'm saying to you at the game, you know, if he just scores the chances he should, his tally just creeps up, and then that kind of aspect of the debate just becomes null and void. And then you're talking about him in glowing terms constantly, and outside of the Liverpool bubble as well, they'll start to realise what an important figure he is for the team. More of the same on Sunday. He's just got to try and occupy Saliba and Gabriel as much as he can, and just keep being a menace. But I thought he was excellent, really. He should have scored, but a top performance all round, other than the missed pen and the header against the bar.
It'll be interesting to see if he is fit against Arsenal, what they do with him, because that cup game, he was struggling, wasn't he, when he was down the middle, but it was on the left when he was causing real mischief there. Maybe it is one where, even if he was fully fit, you just start him on the bench anyway, and he's a power play, isn't he? You send him on there, and then Arsenal are going to be rattled. You've still got the electric pace of Diaz on the left. Jota always scores against them. And Gakpo dropping into midfield is that extra body to get hold of the game. Liverpool have got options, and that's without Mohamed Salah, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was difficult to know who was playing where, wasn't it, on Wednesday? Diaz was definitely down left, but Jota and Núñez sort of interchanging. It felt like they were both central, even though obviously one of them would have had to have occupied the right-hand spot. Yeah, I mean, the versatile, aren't they, Liverpool's players? Pretty much to a man they are across the entire squad. I think there's only maybe Van Dijk and Robertson who can sort of only play one position, maybe Kwanzaa as well. But
play right back.
Well, yeah. You have to be versatile as a Liverpool player, and certainly as a forward, don't you? Unless you're Mo Salah and you know where you're playing every week. But yeah, we're coming on to our teams in a bit, but I just wonder whether sticking Diaz on that right might give some food for thought. I was a little bit worried, to be honest, about the forward line without Salah, but they put that to bed.
Yeah, they've got a couple of questions about sort of team selection, which we'll get onto a little bit later on. But just wanted to go back to something that Klopp said this morning in his press conference. He said, if you want to be around City, you better win all games. So no pressure then going into Sunday. I mean, how big of a game is it on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, from a home perspective, I think I said to Doyle that Liverpool have got to win all the games now at Anfield between now and the rest of the season. And that will include Manchester City and Tottenham, of course. Yeah, it's a big one, but I just wonder whether it's a bigger one for Arsenal. Draws no good to Liverpool, really. It draws basically just well-dressed defeats between now and the end of the season, given that City are in that kind of imperious run that we all expected of them. They're kind of in the midst of it now, aren't they? What was it, last 7 or 8, if they won, something like that, maybe even more. So, Liverpool, difficult because one of the toughest places to go, probably outside of the Etihad. But if they do win, you have to think, is that Arsenal's title challenge done? They'll be 8 points clear, and Liverpool they'd require Liverpool to lose 3 there, wouldn't they? And they've only lost 1 so far. So maybe there's a chance to really make a statement and take Arsenal out of the equation. But on the flip side, Arsenal will know that maybe if they don't win, if they do lose, then that's them done. So it's going to be a really intriguing one, and a kind of back and forth one. And I say it every week, but it's going to be another fascinating one.
Yeah, and Klopp did say as well this morning that we have to be more dominant, when he was reflecting on previous Liverpool-Arsenal games over the last few years. And Arsenal have, the last couple of meetings dominated, although I think the possession stats have been a lot closer this season, haven't they? But I think, you go back to that FA Cup game, Liverpool could have been out of it in the first 10-15 minutes, couldn't they, with the amount of chances and the amount of possession that Arsenal has early on. So Liverpool do have to ensure that they don't sort of get off on the wrong foot, as they did in that game on Sunday.
I say it's the last four, isn't it? Arsenal started really well in the last four. Liverpool have come back, and it's been enough to get a couple of draws. They lost, didn't they, at the Emirates last year when they conceded in the first minute. But it's just start better.
Yeah,
I'd like to think they'll be in a better place this time, because at least Van Dijk's available. Imagining there's a few other players there. I can't remember the 11 off the top of my head from the Cup game, but the squad is in a better place with Szoboszlai, McAllister, and all of them have come back from injury. Who knows, maybe we'll even see Thiago on the bench if he's impressing enough in training. So you'd like to think Liverpool can use that knowledge, high on confidence. And Arsenal, they always strike me as a very fragile team. Like, they can beat anyone on their day, but over a course of a season, I'm not worried about them. Like, Arsenal are always going to Arsenal. They're always going to choke at that last moment. It's how we felt about Liverpool 2017, 2016, before that, before Klopp came in and made them into a side that can win things. Like, they won their first trophy, or they got to the Champions League final, and then they took that next step. Arsenal have not had that experience. They were not going to get that experience by going in and winning the Premier League last year. You don't just become champions overnight by them making that your first trophy. So they still lack something. They've got some good players, but then they've got others, and you think, you're not going to win the Premier League title with Jesus as your main striker and your only striker. I know he's done it loads with City, but they had Aguero there as well. They had so many other options there. They're just lacking a little bit something to be that bit more. And you can put them out of the title race here. They're still got fragile minds. We saw in the Cup game, they didn't take the chances early on and they fell apart. Liverpool can make that happen again.
Yeah, very, very bold claim there. They're already out of the title race. I'm not sure I'll be that confident until after the full-time whistle on Sunday. But another thing that Klopp said this morning was that having a well-stocked squad isn't a challenge, but a luxury. I mean, it's quite rare for any squad, but for Liverpool in particular, to have so many players available. But there are some big questions, and I think probably the biggest one, I know Nicholas Axelson on YouTube has said, I hope we start Bradley against Arsenal. He'll have Martinelli in his back pocket. I mean, what would you do on that? We'll get on to the whole teams a bit later on, but just the Bradley one, I suppose, is the biggest question mark, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, Klopp was right, wasn't he? You know, it's a luxury, because Liverpool haven't had an opportunity to select the full fit complement of players all season, have they? You know, because just by virtue of Thiago, Liverpool's best midfielder, being injured all season. So hopefully in the next few weeks that'll start to change and Liverpool will be able to rest and rotate as and when. But the pitch is looking a lot healthier now than it did a couple of weeks ago with the returns of Szoboszlai and Trent and Robertson, of course, on Wednesday night. Even McAllister sat out the Norwich game, didn't he, because he had a little bit of an issue. But on the right side, yeah, I just don't see how you can drop Conor Bradley after a performance like that, because the incentive is to play well and stay in the team. So, okay, I get that he's inexperienced and it's a huge game and all that, but, you know, so was everyone at one point. You know, every single player has been played when they've been inexperienced. So, play him. Put him at right back, see how he gets on against Martinelli.
Did very well there in the cup game against.
Yeah, he hasn't really been overawed defensively, has he? I can only think of sort of one time when someone's got around him, and that was Harry Wilson at Fulham, whenever that was last week. But generally, he's been rock solid defensively, and then maybe it frees up Trent to put him in a different role. But these are, like Klopp says, the luxuries to have that he certainly hasn't had in the last, what, 2 months, 3 months, or all season.
So if we focus just on right back, it's the first time since 2017-18 where you've not had to rush Alexander-Arnold back from an injury, where he's still your first choice right back. But then, yeah, I will take it from with Gomez. Since then, you've had what, Milner can go there, but you're just waiting for Trent to get back. Joe Gomez, Trent get back, Nico Williams. Conor Bradley's just taking it to a next level. He's offering the things the same way and offensively, like getting forward, getting goals, getting assists. But he's so quick as well, so he can get back and win it back. He's like a mixture of Trent and Robertson, and it's exciting to see. You kind of wish that you could do a 13-player side, just because who would you drop in midfield to get Trent in that midfield so you could keep Bradley at right back? And it's going to get even more of a luxury when Endo's back from the Asian Cup. So, I don't envy Jurgen Klopp having to pick his 11 from this. But as he said today, having five substitutions helps, because you're keeping everyone happy, because you're just making changes on the hour mark and you can rotate it quite nicely.
I suppose slightly less of a headache on the other side with Andy Robertson, just because of the length of his layoff. Yeah. And you would like to think he'd maybe be given a little bit more time before he's thrown in. Joe Gomez there has been a bit of a revelation, hasn't he, in the last few weeks.
Roberto Carlos.
Would you be good to keep Gomez in on Sunday?
Yeah, I would for this one especially, because he'll be up against Saka, won't he? Saka cutting inside. Gomez has just been so good recently. You might as well keep him in. And it does seem to suit the formation more, because he is that natural centre-back. So if you've got the right-back inverted or just getting forward, you've got a bit more defensive solidity there. It seems strange when we're saying that your first choice left-back and Robertson, you're not sure when he'll get back in the side. And we're saying the same thing about Trent. Like I said, I think to David Lynch on Wednesday, you can see the drop-off here, because they've just sent on the Premier League and Champions League winning full-back.
Yeah.
And that's when Chelsea came back into it a little bit. But yeah, it's a welcome dilemma for Klopp. But if it's not broken, don't change it.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. I do sort of sense as well that Joe Gomez is going to score his first goal. And it's got to be in a big game, hasn't it? It can't be in like...
He should have taken the penalty, shouldn't he?
Well, I think it's written in the stars for him to either score some sort of winner against Arsenal or City or something.
He'll have the Vincent Kompany moment.
Yeah, we live in hope.
Possibly, yeah.
Looking sort of a bit further up the pitch then, if Darwin doesn't play, I think someone asked us a question about this actually. Mark Anthony on YouTube has asked, if Darwin is out, who would you play?
Gakpo, isn't it? I mean, there's not too many other options really. No Salah, no Ben Doak for even the wild card really. So yeah, it'd have to be Gakpo. Two very different profiles, offer different things. Gakpo kind of keeps hold of it a bit better, doesn't he? Makes it stick a little bit more, protects the ball, carries it well, can shoot from distance. But Nunes, for me, has been in really good form all season and certainly the last few weeks. So it'd be a blow if he wasn't fit. But just from those pictures that we saw at training, just before we started recording, I get the impression that he seemed okay. And also, I wonder, you know, Klopp just sort of offered that up without getting asked about it. So I wonder whether...
Mind games.
No, not so much mind games. I just wonder, you know, if he was injured, Klopp would have to be asked directly about Darwin Nunes' fitness for him to provide an update.
To be fair, the fact that he did offer it up, no one asked him about any other injuries. Like, no one followed up, how's McAllister doing, or is Thiago closer? He completely sidestepped all of that because he threw that out there.
Yeah.
So the whole squad could be out for all we know at this point.
Possibly. I think he'll be all right. I think Nunes will be clear to play. He said the x-rays kind of indicated that it was all clear, and that's obviously a good sign. So, yeah, I'd put Nunes in for this one, and then he can have 6 days of rest, can't he, before Burnley next week?
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'll offer a contrary option if he doesn't make it. Just you could put Szoboszlai on the wing and put Jota down the middle. Before he got injured, Klopp was saying that could be something they'd do during AFCON, and then he just got injured at the wrong time, but that would free up Trent to be in midfield. I don't think it would happen, but the fact that we have got all these options for
He tried that at Bournemouth in the Cup.
Was it Bournemouth?
Yeah.
It might have been like Sheffield United or something where he mentioned it post-match after that. As in, it was something they were clearly thinking about going forward, and it just hasn't materialised. But they've got lots of versatile players, so they can have these discussions behind the scenes and weigh it up and see what's best.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, and just another player I want to touch on quickly, Diogo Jota. I mean, he is. We know what a prolific finisher he is, and
especially against Arsenal.
Yeah, he does. He loves a goal against Arsenal, doesn't he? And I think Klopp described him this morning as the complete package. And I don't know about you, but I feel like his last few performances, it's been really sort of noticeable that his overall game, the amount that he's been able to contribute, his work rate and everything like that has been, you know, even at an even higher level than it has been previously.
Yeah, one of the things Klopp said was, you know, he very rarely looked at a medical report after the game. He didn't see Jota's name on it, whether it's hamstring injury, knee injury, or just, you know, mundane things like a knock or a bruise or whatever. And recently he's been off that list, and you can sort of tell on the performances, can't you? He's absolutely flying. I think Klopp said he's literally flying, didn't he? He called them fresh, he called them explosive, said the complete package, super smart. He basically just gave them all the plaudits you want to level at a player, and you can understand why. You know, since he's come back on Boxing Day, I think he scored 5 goals, has he? Few assists in there as well.
Scoring so many.
Yeah, he's a player in real form. 13 now for the season, obviously second to Mo Salah, and Liverpool's biggest goal threat for Sunday, I'd suggest. So, yeah, been in great form. Probably his best, well, definitely his best form now for 2 years at Liverpool.
Well, we were saying this on Wednesday, weren't we? Like, he got the ankle injury against Inter Milan.
Yeah,
like had to rush back for the League Cup final, and he just had a few moments towards the end of that season. Like, he scored at the Etihad, but he was still not at his best. And then he had a couple of injuries with international side out for a while.
He got that injury against Man City, didn't he? Yeah. The 1-0 win in October, and then he was out for 4 months. And then when you come back, season Liverpool are already struggling, and he's just about looking to get fit again more than anything, aren't you? And
goes on that lengthy goal drought as a result.
Yeah.
But now he's got games in under his belt after the other injury at Man City this season. And, well, he's had a month, 6 weeks of rhythm. We've seen the benefits of him. And when he was scoring all those goals before 2 years ago, it was when they were going for all 4 trophies. So it's a timely return to form. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before we get on to team selection then, had quite a few questions coming through about the potential replacements for Jurgen Klopp, obviously sort of the leading candidate among those names. It is Xabi Alonso. Just a quick one from both of you. Would you be keen for him to be the number one replacement?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I think I said this last week when Brendan Rodgers left, I think Klopp was the unequivocal first choice, wasn't he? But Liverpool fans wouldn't swap Klopp for anyone in the world. So whoever you want to come in is automatically less than a Jurgen Klopp, which is a difficult position to be starting from as a manager. And a bit of groundswell of support is needed in terms of, you know, Alonso would have that coming in as a club legend and a kind of revered figure of, you know, certainly the 2000s era of football, isn't it? So if he wins the Bundesliga and or Europa League, I don't think there's any other candidate, really. But that's a big ask for such an inexperienced manager, as is leading Liverpool. But at the moment, I'd probably put him just ahead of the rest of the pack.
Yeah, he's like the standout for me, just because he's got that aura about him. He's played for some of the very best managers around, and he just feels like that student of the game that can take the next step. There isn't really any leading candidates there. You've got the experience that you'd snap up. Like, you can look at Zidane's CV or Mourinho's CV, both free agents. You wouldn't want them anywhere near the club. It wants someone who's got that connection there. And the names that stand out is, well, Alonso, De Zerbi, the younger managers. Maybe Unai Emery's been one of the better managers in the Premier League. He's proven in European football and done it at a number of clubs. But you're not looking at the teams in Spain, Germany, other teams in Portugal and like that, and thinking, oh, yes, I definitely want their manager. It'd be someone who's a bit of an unknown quantity. Like, there's the Sporting Lisbon manager, isn't it? Who's,
Ruben Amorim.
Yeah, he's been linked a bit. But Alonso just seems a class above.
Yeah, well, of course, this weekend, full focus will be on Arsenal. The new manager chat can wait. So we'll have your team selections now, then. Go on, go see starts.
Yeah, that line. Alisson, Conor Bradley, which is crazy to be saying when Trent's fit, but great, he's in great form, isn't he? Gomez, fair play to Gomez. He's been brilliant for the last few weeks. And Konate and Van Dijk.
Yep.
Probably the same. I've still not worked out how I'm getting Trent in that team.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's... It's doing well that back four, so we might as well stick with it.
Yeah, talk us through your midfield. Then. Are you gonna shoehorn Trent in there somewhere?
It's a difficult one because McAllister's doing so well. Like I said earlier, we didn't get the update on the knock he got at the weekend, so we'll see if he's training now. If he's fine, McAllister keeps his place, and then it's Jones and Szoboszlai. It's hard to shoehorn Trent in there because he's not really started a league game there, has he? He's just had a couple of the cup games, maybe. Let's go with what's been doing the job.
Ghosty?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to overlook McAllister because of how good he's been. Szoboszlai back fit, isn't he? And Curtis Jones on the left, and keep Trent in reserve for a right back or a defensive midfield role.
And forward line then, assuming Darwin's fit, does he keep his place in there?
I think so, yeah. I mean, like I say, he should have scored the other night, but I thought his all-round performance was excellent. So, I don't know whether I'd play him off the left and put Diaz down the right and Jota through the middle, and you can sort of interchange as the game goes. But I just think, like you said earlier on, Nunes off the left in that cup game, he really started to cause problems, didn't he? And Diaz actually gets his goal from the right side, doesn't he? So, yeah, that'd be my front three.
I'm keeping Darwin on the bench, even if he's okay. Like, he's played a lot of football. You just don't want to risk it. I know they can play through the pain barrier. They can take some painkiller injections or something. But he's just... He'd be such a good impact sub against the defence that can get rattled quite easily. If you want to dominate the play, Gakpo as a false nine is the perfect man to do that. Jota seems the most comfortable when he goes on the right-hand side, and Diaz has still got that electric pace on the left to cause some problems.
Yeah, I mean, I hope Trent Alexander-Arnold's not watching this pod right now, because all three of us have got him on the bench for this game, I'm sure.
He's played 300 games. He can sit this one out.
I do think, you know, whatever lineup that Jürgen goes with, you know, Trent undoubtedly will have a part to play on Sunday, and probably if Liverpool do go on to get the win, I think he will have something to say about that.
Yeah.
But only time will tell.
It's Trent and Darwin off the bench. Trent free kick. Darwin heads at home. It's 1-0 win.
But I think we mentioned it earlier on. Liverpool have got to kind of sit in, haven't they, and keep it tight early on, get on the ball, quieten the crowd. It's not the most intimidating of atmospheres, the Emirates, but Liverpool have just got to start better than they have the last few times they've been to the Emirates and just hang in there. And then slowly sort of, you know, impose themselves on the game. And in the second half, I think spaces might open up for some of those Trent passes and get the likes of Nunes in behind, maybe.
Score predictions, Theo?
Let's go 1-1. I'd take a draw. You still got a 3-point lead.
I feel like this pod has been so full of positivity, and you've just brought us back down to it. Yeah, go on. Have courage in your convictions, Theo.
I said they're out of the title race. Well, yeah, they're not going to win the title, but they can still get a point off Liverpool at the Emirates.
1-1?
Yeah, 1-1.
Go on, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking about that Man City game when they beat them in October. That was the Emirates, wasn't it? It was a massive result for them.
I'd be more confident if they hadn't won the cup game. Like, just the fact to go and do it twice at the Emirates in the space of a month just seems a bit too much to ask.
2-2 draw.
2-2 draw. I'm going to be brave. I'm going to put my neck on the line. I'm going to say 2-1 to Liverpool. We can only hope. Of course, only time will tell. Arsenal will be gunning for the win.
You've not that written down, have you?
I've not, no. That's just as Jürgen Klopp said in his press conference today, we all have to buckle up because it's going to be a crazy few weeks, crazy few months.
I want to make a note about that, actually, because speaking to you about it earlier today, wasn't I? It was about McAllister's form. And I hope the journalist who asked the question doesn't mind me saying, but it was relatively inexperienced journalist who asked the question, wasn't it? You know, a bit of a standard McAllister's inform question. And Klopp answered it, but then this is the thing with Klopp, he always gives you more. He gives you 2 minutes, 3 minutes answer. And by the end of it, it was kind of a rallying cry, wasn't it, to the entire club and the entire fan base. Buckle up, hold your breath, let's dig in, let's go for it. And, you know, basically, let's see what this ride ends with. And it was almost a bit of a kind of call to arms. And it was just like a, you know, statesman-like address. And that's kind of what he brings. And that's what ultimately they're going to be missing out on when he goes.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it does have the desired effect on Sunday. But for now, thank you very much for listening to the Blood Red podcast. And we'll be back next week to discuss all things Arsenal.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.